First, a couple of announcements. This is our second last class for this semester. And you should have received, first of all, a printout for the Catholic Faith magazine. If you've not yet subscribed, I would ask you to please sign out and subscribe for the Catholic Faith magazine. If you've not received the first issue yet, also mark that down. I have not yet received the first issue. The second issue of the magazine has just been put out, and the theme is development of doctrine. Then you should also have received an outline of the document on ecumenism, which we want to look at during class today. As you know, that's the fostering of Christian unity for today's class. Our first class is on the Gospel of Life, and our second class is on the ecumenical movement, following on our course this semester, comparing Catholicism and Protestantism. You should have received from questions 138 on. My hope and plan is to finish the manuscript of the Catechism on the Gospel of Life by the end of this term. In other words, for this semester, we plan to finish the document on the Gospel of Life, which will be in around 250 or 300 questions and answers. I believe in our last class we finished 138. All of you have question 138. Suppose then, as we have been doing, going over as many of the questions and answers covering the Evangelium Vitae, or the Gospel of Life, of Pope John Paul II as we can see. As I've been telling you, I would ask you then, until our next class, to be sure to read both the questions and the answers up to as far as you will have received your notes, which I believe is question 183. No way we could possibly finish all this matter in one class. Who remembers the last question that we were dealing with in class? Now we'll start with 138 this afternoon. Remember, in context, the Holy Father was already talking about the culture of death which has penetrated the whole world, beginning, I should say, hear it, beginning with Russia. Russia was the first modern nation to widely legalize abortion. The annual abortions in communist Russia for 70 years were 16 million abortions every year. hand, anyone who thinks that communism is dead does not know the world we're living in. 138. What is the prevailing tendency on the value of human life? The tendency is to value human life only to the extent that it brings pleasure and satisfaction here and now. As a result, suffering seems like an unbearable setback from which we should be freed at all costs. More than once, I've defined paganism as Christianity without the cross. Either we accept the cross, or we may be called Christians, but we're Christians only in name. What then is the view of death on these premises? Death considered senseless if it subtly interrupts a human life still open to new and interesting experiences here on earth. On the other hand, this same death becomes, again, a rightful liberation when continued life promises only pain and even greater suffering. Never did I dream, when I was ordained in 1947, can't believe it, 48 years, that what I knew had already become a method used in communist Russia and in Nazi Germany. I never dreamt our nation would become a country in which death now is, for millions, a liberation from the only life in which so many people believe, a liberation from suffering in this life. In other words, death is terrible if you're enjoying yourself here on earth. And death is wonderful if it will deliver you from your sufferings that you're experiencing here and now. Never, as I keep repeating, never in the 2,000 years of Christianity, never have the most fundamental principles of our faith been more widely and deeply ignored, denied, and now by millions of once professed Christians and even Catholics is no longer what they believe in. What is the philosophy of those who deny or neglect their relationship to God? The obvious. Such people demand that society should guarantee them ways and means of deciding what to do with their life in full and complete autonomy. Our life on earth has only as much meaning as we believe in God. That when, as we read in Genesis, that God then, after creating the rest of the visible world, created man to his own image and likeness. The essence of being created to God's image and likeness is to share with Him in His Spirit, having a mind that can think and a will that can choose. Only if we believe that God has created us to His own image and likeness does life after what we call death. I keep repeating to one audience after another, do not say that somebody died. If you say it, don't mean it. Because we never die. Our bodies die, but not our souls. The moment we close our eyes, our bodily eyes, in what we call death, our soul, which has, let's make sure we know, our soul does have eyes too. That's what the eyes of the soul are. They are the mind. Oh, how crucial this is. We believe our souls are immortal and hear it. Our souls remain conscious. Do I say remain conscious? They become more conscious than ever before. The moment our body dies, our wills remain and retain the three powers of desiring, of choosing, and of loving. For those who do not accept or who ignore their relationship to God, then when the body dies, they are dead. On the contrary, over the years, how many times I've told our Lord, Lord, how am I looking forward to the dawn of eternity. My favorite definition for an insane person is one who wants to stay here on earth. Utter insanity. We are here on earth and hear it to carry the cross and love it. Not because anyone loves pain, but because we love the God who became man out of love for us. And to show how deeply He loves us, He took on our human nature and died on the cross. Ah, that's love. 141. What is one of the more alarming symptoms of the culture of death? The term, by the way, coined by our Holy Father, that I'm pleased to see is being used by those who are not Catholic or even Christian. We are surely living in a culture of death. Especially alarming in prosperous societies, euthanasia is considered a human right to take control of death and bring it about before its time. And, what a rich vocabulary the devil has. We'll provide for a gentle ending of one's own life or the life of another person. As I've said to some of you so many times, my month in Calcutta last year, I've been teaching the Oriental religions for over 30 years. But I never realized what a difference Christianity makes till my stay in Hindu India. No one knows how many people on the streets and sidewalks of Calcutta are there overnight. 1 million would be a low figure. Some are dead. Some are dying. Some are just paralyzed and helplessly ill. Some are sleeping. We who believe that God became man, so he might, having a human nature, might be able to die on the cross and sacrifice his bodily life, gain for us, that's our faith, an eternal life for which we are made. But I repeat, or better, I'm quoting, and the Holy Father emphasizes, especially prosperous societies like ours. And the more we have of this world's goods, the more we enjoy what this world can offer, the longer hours we sleep, the more food we eat, the less we work, the more painkillers and tranquilizers we have, the more we want to hold on, oh, hold on for dear life, to remaining here on earth. And unless we believe in God and believe in life after bodily death, then euthanasia, again, what a lie. I have seriously thought of writing a dictionary of the devil. Oh, by the way, you know what our course we're going to be next semester? Have you heard? Angels and Demons, first course, and then the Lay Apostolate, second course. The devil has a vocabulary all his own, and by the way, it has deeply penetrated the unabridged Webster's Dictionary of the English language. I know exactly what I am saying. Euthanasia, thanatos, death in Greek, EU in Greek, happy, happy death. What a joy to be delivered from the sufferings of this world. If you don't believe in a life after bodily death, I'm never sure whether I'm repeating the stories that I've already said over the years. Some years ago, giving a lecture in University of Southern Illinois, before the lecture, I had dinner with one of the faculty members at the State University. He had just come back from Scandinavia. Father, whatever you can do, save the people, preach to the people that euthanasia is a terrible crime. In Denmark, Suicide is a normal way of dying. And for doctors, it's part of their medical training on how to gently end their patients' lives. You report to a government office, and they discuss with you what day you would like to leave this world. They study your personality, which would be the most painless way of dying. The normal way of dying for countless thousands is by suicide. My 5 years at Western Michigan State University, I keep telling again, one audience after another, my highest was 3 suicides in 2 weeks among my students. You never read that in the daily papers. What is euthanasia? Euthanasia is an action or omission which of itself, by intention, causes death with the purpose of eliminating a person's suffering. And I'm speaking in a state, Michigan, by the way, has been chosen by the leaders of the culture of death. Michigan is the leading state to propagandize and promote both suicide and killing other people who are suffering. The most powerful financial interests in America are behind Dr. Kevorkian. Do you hear me? He is a paid employee. What is aggressive medical treatment? This is resorting to medical procedures which no longer correspond to the real situation of a patient. They are procedures which are disproportionate to any expected results, or because they impose an excessive burden on the patient or his family. 143 is very important. Clearly, we are here speaking about people who are, as we say, deathly ill. And the United States has increased the lifespan of every American since 1900 by 30 years. You multiply 30 times about 250 million. That's billions of life years which have been added to the lifespan of the United States, for which we should thank God. 143, therefore, and 144 touch on the very delicate subject of how long or how much medical treatment should continue to be given to a person who is, as we say, fatally ill. First, two premises. the intention may never be. No matter how painful the person's condition may be, no matter how much the person might want to be delivered from their sufferings, the intention may never be to kill the person. Let's be clear. Never. Because that is murder already by intention. Well, the Holy Father tells us, and I'm paraphrasing as I keep telling you, from his encyclical, The Gospel of Life. When the procedures are disproportionate to any expected results, or because they impose an excessive burden on the patient or the family, then number 144 follows. Then the patient may refuse such forms of treatment, but on one condition. How important this is. On one condition, that the normal care due to the sick person in similar cases is not interrupted. Like what? You do not remove feeding or hydration. And don't you dare call that artificial. Am I clear? I've struggled with too many people, and here in Detroit with some doctors. Girl, badly injured, automobile accident, unconscious, 17 years old. And the father thought that his daughter should die. The mother resisted. So then, I went to the hospital, argued with the father, reasoned with the lawyers, reasoned with the doctors. I'm happy to say, though he's both still alive and her coma, I believe miraculously, was healed. Let me repeat two more, or better, emphasize what I already said for 143 and 144. We may never intend, we never want the person to die. Deliberately to do whatever will cause that person's death is a grave sin, whether that person is myself or someone else. We may never intend the death of anyone, obviously an innocent human being. And secondly, we must provide, and don't you dare call it artificial. The medical books call it artificial. They are lying. One medical school after another requires its medical students to perform abortions to get an MD degree. Do you still hear me? So that the normal means of survival, food and hydration, may not be withdrawn. And such medical procedures as can be, no matter how demanding it may be on the family, provided there is reasonable ground for hoping the person to recover, we should make every human effort to preserve human life. 145. What is the Church's teaching on the use of sedatives to relieve a patient's pain? Again, we distinguish now between the praiseworthy and the obligatory. It is highly praiseworthy for a person to accept his pain with resignation to God's will and in union with the sufferings of Christ. Let me be clear, it is highly praiseworthy to encourage people to accept their suffering so that even though medically they could be relieved of the pain in such a way as to, well, not die while they're suffering. Then, number two, it is, however, permissible to relieve one's pain by narcotics. That's the term used in the Pope's statement, so I thought I'd use the same word. Even when the result is a lessened consciousness and a shortening of life. In the latter case, notice that death is not intended. Am I clear? The death is not intended. What is intended is a relief of the suffering. Even though there is a risk, the person might die sooner because whatever pain relief had been given to that person's body. All I can tell you, I have assisted with so many people on their deathbed. There is, and I mean this, deep interior joy for those who are suffering bodily and dying, but still conscious, and to unite their sufferings with our Lord on the cross. In fact, I could not think what a strange statement to make of a happier death. Because, took me years to learn this, the more we suffer out of love for Christ in this world, the more sure we are of reaching heaven and being happier. You know, there are 3 degrees of happiness in heaven. Did you know that? Some in heaven are happy. Others are happier. And some are happiest. And the happiest are those who have patiently endured suffering here on earth. We continue. 146. Is euthanasia gravely sinful? Yes. And the Pope felt it was necessary to put it this way. Is the infallible teaching of the churches what we call ordinary and universal magisterium, that euthanasia is a grave violation of the law of God? It is the deliberate and morally forbidden killing of an innocent human being. This will be an occasion to stress what we've said more than once before. Oh, how mistaken so many Catholics can be on the Church's infallible, which means irreversible, teaching. You find writers, Catholic writers, with a bright, shining imprimatur at the front of the book, while the book is dead wrong, claiming that there are very few doctrines how the church has infallibly taught over the centuries. That is an L-I-E. That's a lie. What the church has taught over the centuries is infallible precisely because of that ordinary and universal magisterium. Magisterium, we know, means the church's teaching authority. Ordinary means the teaching of those who are bishops, successors of the apostles. Always watch the preposition under the bishop of Rome. And then universal, if this had been taught over the centuries, then you don't need a definition. It is infallible. It is the grave sinfulness of contraception, infallible teaching. Yes. It is euthanasia, infallible teaching. Yes. Why? Because it had been so taught from the first days of Christianity. Every once in a while we now see the word in print, but barring the miracle that I hope God will work in favor of our nation, we're going to see the word infanticide more and more. As I've said more than once in this course, in the Roman Empire, in the first century of the Christian era, by Roman law, the mother had to show, right after a child was born, had to show the child to the father for him to examine the infant and pass judgment whether that infant should remain alive. By Roman law, every place where a mother gave birth to a child, there had to be a huge jar of water for the baby to be drowned. That was Roman law. And the majority of those who were killed right after birth were the girls. Any defect, anything which the father could possibly recognize as defective, the baby had to be drowned. Oh, how innocent we Americans are of the history of that pagan world into which Christianity was born. And what we don't realize, the United States is becoming more and more a de-Christianized country. And by the way, the subtitle for the second course next semester, the principal title is The Lay Apostolate. The subtitle is The Reconversion of America. America is a mission country. And it's much harder to convert paganized people than those who had never been Christian in the first place. Infanticide is being carefully planned by the legal and medical profession in our country. I think I should report to you. Remember, I asked you to pray for that young mother, remember? They had a child out of wedlock. The father decided he would not marry the girl and told her to have an abortion. She refused. Instead, she had the child legally adopted. In the lawsuit, the jury's decision was against the mother. And now it is $7 million penalty for not aborting her baby. And behind that is another powerful movement, the United States, to delegalize adoption in America. Pray, by the way. Her name is Ann Salvaggi, S-A-L-V-A-G-G-I. Her name is in the papers on the East Coast, so she won't mind my identifying her. $147 million Is suicide morally wrong? Yes. Suicide is always as morally sinful as willful murder. It represents a rejection of God's absolute right over human life and death. And of course, behind all that we are here reading is a wider and wider loss of faith in the meaning of life here on earth as a preparation and prelude for a life after bodily death. 148. What is the church's teaching on assisted suicide? Assisted suicide, as it is being called, by helping another person commit suicide, is a grave sin. In the words of St. Augustine, I thought I'd quote the whole passage. It is never licit to kill another, even if he should wish it. In the words of St. Augustine, therefore, even if a person requests, because hanging between life and death, he begs for help in freeing the soul struggling against the bonds of the body and longing to be released, nor is it licit even when a sick person is no longer able to live. My medical doctor friends tell me all medical books now in the United States, textbooks, come out in two forms, or the same book on how to care for those below 60 and how to care for those over 60 years of age. Those below 60, give them medical care to continue living. Those over 60, give them medical care, but do not plan for their survival. Over the years, in teaching, giving retreats, and directing, the Little Sisters of the Poor, who, as you know, have a worldwide apostolate for caring for the aged, they tell me they're having a hard time in the United States with their homes for the aged because of the demonic laws against the aged. They are closing houses for the aged in America. They will change aged people from one house to another so that the laws of that state will not try to force the sisters to terminate these people's lives. What is the great gift of Christianity to the meaning of life and death? Oh, how we need this. You need it, I need it. Let's be honest. From the youngest child here to the oldest one here in the room, all of us